Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael Veazey from 10K Collective podcast, as well as Amazing FBA podcast, which you may have come across me there. This is the 10K Collective podcast, which is for advanced Amazon sellers, at least six, seven, and eight figure sellers. And I'm delighted to introduce Paulina Masson of shopkeeper.com. And Paulina is an Amazon seller and the founder of shopkeeper.com, which is a profit dashboard. And profit and pricing are the sort of things we are going to be talking about with Paulina. So welcome to the show. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
So first question, just a quick one. It's always intriguing because my guests come from all over the world. Where in the world are you today?
So I am in Turkey right now, but I did live in Canada for 15 years, and I am originally from Lithuania. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's
quite
me.
An international background. Excellent.
Where about you? Where are you now?
Yeah, tell us a bit more about your background. And, you know, obviously, we started as an Amazon seller. What other sort of things have brought you to this point?
Right. So, I did start as an Amazon seller. And because my real background is software developer, so I always look for tools and things that I could make my life easier as a business owner. You are also an entrepreneur, and everyone who's listening is. And you know that when you're an entrepreneur, you're trying to stick to the creative part of the process and not to, you know, bother yourself with the manual repetitive tasks, which can be easily outsourced and delegated. So one such a thing was managing the numbers of my Amazon business. And then I decided to create a quick software for myself to manage the profit calculations and pulling all the fees and costs from Amazon. And that's what today is ShopKeeper. So I did start as an Amazon seller, but eventually became a full-time software founder from that.
Excellent. Yeah, it's often the path for many people. And yeah, software developer background, obviously, I guess it's like a lot of people, they say to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So a software developer, everything is obviously an opportunity to develop software. And that makes a lot of sense when, as you say, if you got anything gets repeated a lot, you've got to start outsourcing or automating it. And that's just a side note, but it's just something to emphasize to anyone listening who, I do know a couple of people in my masterminds who are doing $1.5 million without any VAs or anything. And I think that outsourcing and automating is absolutely critical because you can't grow any further without going crazy for that point.
Yeah, you leave space in your mind. That's right. It's a very important point, actually. You leave some space in your mind to have the creative power, right? And then you can strategize about things like numbers, profitability, all the things that are important. If you just bother yourself with the manual things that you have to do every day, you basically lose out on the creation of new products, new ideas, new ways to grow your business. It's definitely very important.
Yeah, and I can hear the passion in your voice about that, and I couldn't agree more. I think it's funny how, and I know this is, you know, we're focused on pricing and profit, but this is a subset of business, right? And I think running and creating a business is a job in itself. And I think people at the beginning, there's sort of two, three levels of this. At the beginning, everyone gets pretentious, goes to lots of seminars and doesn't actually have any revenue of any kind. I think at that point, you need to get down to mechanics, get your hands dirty and actually get something happening. But the next stage, people often get stuck at, I think, and I see this quite a lot, that people are doing well. They've made, you know, maybe $1 million a year or something in revenue with maybe one VA or something and a tiny team. And I think if they're serious about scaling bigger, and revenue is one thing, but the selling price of your business is based, apart from anything else, mostly as a multiple of the profit or the EBITDA, right? So you've got to grow that, and that's a harder number to grow. So $1 million revenue and, you know, maybe 100,000 profit is not going to give you a retirement level income. So It's the question of how do you ambitiously scale it? And I think people get stuck at being, you know, doing the tasks themselves and getting their hands dirty is all very well, understanding the tasks. But I think the strategic level, I've been amazed in the masterminds over the last 20 months or so, just how important that's been for people really pushing their businesses forward, more than I would have imagined. I mean, even in my most optimistic way of looking at it. So yeah, what are your thoughts on that? Because obviously you're very geared to that way of thinking, I know, for our conversations before.
Exactly. You know, the thing is that it's hard to let go of the control, right? Because you are the one who knows everything best, and you are the only one who knows how to do it well. And, you know, but I've listened to an audiobook recently, and what it said, it's okay to hire someone else who is a mediocre, because then you can create other big things and hire more people who can keep repeating the, let's say, even if a person is mediocre CEO who's sitting instead of you, he's still going to achieve more by repeating over same thing and same thing and same thing consistently. Because you as entrepreneur is very common feature, common trait, not to stick to one thing for very long, right? So if you hire someone else who can repeat the same thing over and over and over, what's been successful, it's very nice to keep growing your business steadily while you focus on just the growth part, right? So on top of that, so the business is continuously growing with another person in there, and that person is learning, becoming better at the same time, while you are just focusing on how to grow it, how to push it forward. And one of my favorite topics is the pricing and profit and how to manage your cash flow. And these things, you know, you can't just let it go. You have to sit and strategically decide where you're going to put your money, how you're going to spend it, like how it's going to affect your numbers 6 months down the line. You know, maybe you are going to buy too much inventory today and then you're going to run out of money 6 months later, you know. Amazon is very, very cash flow intensive business, and it's important to have time in the day to sit and think about it, to clear your schedule, to have time to think, you know. It's just so myself, me too, I am trying to not, I like have my emails automated, you know, managed by someone else and so on, just to have as much time to think in the day as possible, to strategize on things.
I like it. Time to think. Yeah, I think there's a couple of very famous people that have talked about the need for thinking. I think even Goethe back in the day, and this is an unusual
reference. I think I picked it up, from Jason Fried. Yeah, Jason Fried is, I picked it up from Basecamp founder. Yeah, that was his original idea.
Basecamp founder, that seems sick.
Yeah.
I think even back to Goethe, that the German novelist and poet says something like thinking is such hard work that most men just avoid it. And he said men, but it's true for women. Yeah. And that's interesting. The Basecamp founder, I think a lot of people make time for thinking. He was a really smart CEO. It's like Jeff Bezos, famously himself, it was rigorous about that kind of thing. So let's come back to the pricing thing, but let's think of it then from the strategic point of view. You've mentioned managing cash flow. So you've got to decide that strategically. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that, but let's talk first about a very more sort of tactical topic, if you like. But I guess I think it's tactical, but maybe that's completely wrong. Maybe it's strategic, which is pricing. So tell us about pricing, because obviously it's something we are very, very conscious of on a sort of day-to-day level on the one hand. And on the other hand, perhaps it's something that we all deal with in a rather sort of piecemeal tactical way. And maybe there is a strategic way of approaching it. So that was a messy question. Tell us about pricing and then let's get into the detail.
Pricing is definitely a topic that I've been interested for a very long time, longer than I have been an Amazon seller, because I've done previous different businesses before. And pricing strategy in general is what decides your fate as an entrepreneur and as a business owner. So if you can manage your pricing strategies well and increase your profits nicely, you can reap the benefits of the same amount of work. You know, let's say if you have 10 products and you're selling them on Amazon, you could maximize on those 10 just by your pricing strategy, you know, get the most of it rather than spread yourself thin and getting many products with low profit margins and so on. So, you know, when I talk about pricing, usually there are two big sections that I guess I could talk about. It's either the pricing psychology, so the psychology of the numbers, and how I've picked that up from different sources online, how they do the pricing psychology in other fields. And I have applied it to my own Amazon business, in my own pricing. So I could share some of that if you like. And the other part is just a few practical things within Seller Central, and in general, practical things what you can do as an Amazon seller with your pricing, such as split testing, and there's a thing called add-on items and things like that.
Great. All right. Well, let's talk with the let's do the quick practical win on Seller Central. My instinct is go for the bigger picture, and I think that is probably where the longer term value is. But people want something quick and actionable. I know from my meetings, I want to go home from a mastermind meeting and go back to the team and say, right, implement these 10 jobs, which is a fair point. So let's give that immediate payoff and value, and then let's get to the bigger picture. So tips and tricks for Seller Central, the hacks first, please.
All right. So the number one thing is that I could suggest, you know, let's talk about free shipping. What I mean by free shipping is, you know how on Amazon, every marketplace has a certain threshold. So in the United States, you have to spend $25 if you're not a Prime member to get free shipping, right? And then in every country, the threshold is different. So let's say in UK, it's £20. So now what I recommend doing is to look at your existing product range. So sit down and look at your listings. Do you have any product prices that are just below the threshold? So let's say in the United States, if you have anything between like around $21, I would recommend increasing it just above $25 threshold. So make it $25.99, for example. Now, what do you get out of that? First, you immediately get $4 extra or $5 extra profit, which is a huge amount, you know, because most of our products are about $30. So we are mostly making like $7 profit on each item, most of us on average. So getting extra $5 profit on item is huge, you know, just one thing good. And second, the customer will suddenly have free shipping, but in total will pay less. So if your price was originally $20.99, so the $21, now with the shipping, they would have paid $26.50 with the Amazon shipping. But when you make it $25.99, now shipping is free. So they actually, instead of $26.50, they're only paying $25.99, which is $26, right? Just so even less, the customer is paying less, you are getting $5 profit. And on top of that, you are now in the search results for the very popular feature on Amazon, on Amazon.com or all these marketplaces, free shipping checkbox on the sidebar. That is highly used feature on Amazon. So, you know, when they filter by free shipping, you suddenly will appear in the results. So my suggestion is go today and check all your listings. What do you have just under the shipping, free shipping threshold, and then increase that to be just above to monetize on that. So
excellent.
That's one.
Very, yeah. Very practical tip. Nice. Okay, good.
All right. So there's another one I could tell you. It's not really a trick, so to say, but it's something that most people do not use even though it exists. So what I'm going to talk about is coupons. Coupons have been available on .com marketplace for a very long time. And to UK, they just came recently only. It used to be that you only have promotions, you know, those save 10% off on something. But the coupons, when you have a little green tag on your listing in the search results, it became just maybe eight or nine months ago available in European marketplaces. And even though it exists, most sellers are not doing it, to my surprise. Even advanced sellers are not doing it. Now, the benefits of even doing it, what do you get? Well, the first thing immediately is the personalization of the product. You will say, Paulina, wait a minute. Personalization, how does the coupon make your listing personalized? First of all, personalization is very important. We all know that, that if I'm looking at the listing as a buyer, I only look at it from a personal perspective. So will this color match with what I have in the house? Will this, you know, things like that. I'm just looking how it personally affects me. I don't care about you as a seller, how good you are, what guarantee you give me. You know, I just care about me, right? And the coupon has this magic about it that it actually gives you, look what happens. I go there and I see there is a coupon checkbox in the listing. And I like, wait a minute, why do I get a coupon? It says click here to get 20% off. I'm like, what? And I just click and it says suddenly coupon applied. Now, as a buyer, I suddenly feel happy and lucky. Oh, I got some for free. Maybe this is a one-time promo. I shouldn't leave a listing now because maybe, you know, there's this little bit of excitement that happens underneath the coupon, you know. So just, I got it for no reason, you know. And you check mark the box. Immediately, you add some personalization to the listing. And there's a little bit more stickiness to it as well. Because then I want to click the add to box to see how much of a discount I'm getting. And then once I'm so invested in the listing and clicking, I am much more likely to convert. So just having the coupon there is very important. And when I touch about the pricing psychology a little bit, I could tell you which coupon amounts you could use. You know, why is it better to use $3 off, not $4 off, and things like that. And one more thing I will touch upon on the quick tips. You know, when you're deciding your pricing, most of us, how we decide the pricing is we just, I am selling a knife sharpener, and I personally would never pay more than $32 for that item. So I don't even charge for more than $32, because who's going to pay more than $32 on a knife sharpener? No, no. So I'll just, most of us just charge whatever we feel we are capable of paying the most, right, for that item. But this is the worst way to design your price. You should try to climb out your financial limitations box when you are designing the price. So let's say you're making good money, but not so much money, right? So you are now suddenly in a box which is only able to afford the $31 or $40 for the knife sharpener, right? And you don't even think about that range would exist outside of your box. You know, there are people who can pay more and who wouldn't even think about the price that much, who can pay $36, $38, and they're not going to even bother to feel the difference, right? So you have to try to put yourself outside of it when you're designing and base your price mostly on the existing market situation. So you have to look at the prices of other listings and decide how you want to play it. You know, there could be everyone is doing bargain, 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 cheap, cheap, cheap. So maybe you want to be that luxury product, which doesn't exist, one time, one of a kind, who charges more, you know, and be the luxury brand and, you know, position yourself as such, and then you can charge more. Maybe everyone is doing the, you know, everyone is in a similar range, very, very close to each other, you know. Well, try to be a little bit different from them, apart. So just play with whatever the market is you feel is demanding. That's what you should set your prices on. One more tip about looking at the market is to not base your decision on a snapshot of today. Like if you open the listings today and you look at Jungle Scout or whatever, you just open and you look at competing listings, don't ever just trust, okay, these guys are charging 15, 16, and 17. All right, I'm going to be 14. Don't ever do that because they may be running a promo or something can be happening like a season. You know, in Christmas, they'll charge more because it's running out or something like that. So you have to open the historical you know, price. So use tools again like Jungle Scout or there's many, many different tools that show you the history of the price. So analyze your most harsh, fierce competitors on the first page and see what the pricing history was. And from that, take the average price and look at that only when you're basing your decision. So there's one thing other I will just mention that is related to that. When you're playing on the price and trying to choose to be cheaper one or the more expensive one, now you're not sure like which side you should play on. Well, there are two kinds of buyers. There's the spontaneous buyers who buy it quickly, and there's the slower, like methodical buyers. So my brother, for example, he's this methodical buyer. So whatever he buys, even if it's very cheap, he will go and research on, you know, different websites. He has all these softwares and tools that compare the prices. Then he will keep thinking about it for a week before he makes a decision, right? So he finds the best deal that he can ever have, right? All the best coupons of Google's for coupon codes and things like this. Me, I am the spontaneous buyer. I just look at the first page results of Amazon, and if it's an amount less than $200, I don't even think about it too much. I just buy whichever I like better, as I said, from the personal affections. If I like the image better or it matches with something that I have personally better, then I buy that one. So you see, there are two kinds of buyers. This is not really a person. So when I would ask you now, which one are you? Are you spontaneous? Are you methodical? You couldn't even say that I'm always like that or I'm always like that. Most of us, in some cases, do this. So most of us, when the price is higher, we are more of a methodical. When the price is lower, we are more of a spontaneous, maybe. So the type of buying that is spontaneous happens 40% of the time. This is based on a blog information that I read. And the type of that is methodical, it happens 60% of the time. So this is very likely, and it's Amazon data. So this is very likely because Amazon has built as a platform, which is very cheap, affordable things, right? As many things as you can have and most affordably. So that means that they attract the audience, which is more of this methodical buyer. They attract the audience, which are looking for better deals and cheaper prices. That's why there is 60% of them are shopping on there. So now you, when you look at your current prices of other competitors of their historical averages, you should think which target market they are targeting, which one they are catching. So now if they are all selling to these methodical buyers, be the one who's selling to spontaneous buyer. So take the same item you're selling, tell your manufacturer, okay, let's make it a little bit more fancy. So let's add the velvet bag here and the box. And then let's add this extra item there to make it more luxury. And then increase your price vastly to be different, so very different from the other guys, to appear as a luxury product. So it's not enough to just look at prices. Also look whether your competitors are serving this market of methodical buyers or the spontaneous buyers. And then position yourself as one. You cannot be both. You cannot be both cheap and good. You know, you'll have to choose eventually. Which one are you? Are you the bargain product? Are you the luxury product? And once you made your choice, it will be so much easier to decide your prices from that. You know, so once you know your luxury, you know you're going to charge more. You can, you know, all these things, all the pricing strategies related to that will be built into the base that you are the luxury product. So first decide that, and then from that, it will grow all of your pricing strategies.
Nice. Okay. Well, I think you're inadvertently moving from the tactical into the more strategic level, which I like. It's very good, which is excellent. I love it. But
right. I like this topic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you're very fascinated by this. I love the passion about something incredibly practical, actionable, and critical number, the pricing. I think it's amazing to me that I haven't heard anyone talking about it before. So not really as methodically as this. So very, very interesting. So a couple of quick takeaways then. Decide. I think it's kind of we're all used to the idea of deciding whether you're going to be the affordable, the bargain, you know, good value for money, as it were, or the luxury, i.e. affordable still, probably on Amazon, given that most people are on the lower sort of end of the pricing scale when they're buying, but still the affordable luxury and a clear pricing decision. But I think what's very interesting to me is that that's a product-centered business, you know, centered on ourselves idea, isn't it? Whereas you're saying what we're really doing is putting different bait out into the marketplace, and we're trying to land a different fish, either a methodical buyer or a spontaneous one. And we've got to decide which one we're after, which is very interesting because actually completely different virtues of your product that's going to attract them. So one obvious question is, okay, I'm trying to want my cake and eat it here. How can we, this is an off Amazon thing, so it's a bigger picture question around pricing, but how can we deal with those people who are going to Google our product name or our brand name and, you know, look at the results, whether it's our website or social media results or YouTube? What can we engineer off Amazon to drive a better price on Amazon?
Actually, there's one thing you can do as a trick, just to mention, because it popped in my mind right now. You know, there are so many coupon code sites that are providing, you know, deals and coupons. And very often they are scraping Amazon content and other big marketplaces like Walmart.com. They're scraping those and building their websites from that content. So if you are more of a popular brand, you could potentially monetize on that by submitting your own promotions to them. There is at the bottom of all these biggest coupon sites. So go to your VA and tell, you know, find me the biggest coupon websites. And at the bottom, there is like submit your own coupon code or submit your own something. So those coupon codes that you create as a promotion on Amazon Seller Central, you can reuse by putting them in to these coupon code websites. And that will, or sometimes they automatically pick up on yours if you make those available on the listing. So most advanced sellers will know such a thing, which is called a box of death. When you're creating a promotion, and I'm not talking about coupons, I am creating a promotion on Seller Central, there is a box which is very non-descriptive name, and I even forgot what it says. It says something like display page listing, something non-descripting like this. And if you check it, your coupon, your promotion code becomes available to everyone publicly on your listing. And that has killed many sellers by selling their inventory like you for free. Like, for example, if you create a 100% off coupon and then by accident you check box that box of death, then your whole listing gets sold out in 5 minutes, you know, because it's free, and then you lose all your inventory. But here you on purpose would use the box of death by creating, let's say, a 25% off or maybe a 40% off to be more significant, and then create enabling it to be accessible publicly on your listing. Then it's very likely that those coupon sites would scrape the listings that are better sellers. So just I recommend doing it on your best sellers from your product range, and they would publish it on there. So there you would, back to your question about external traffic, how we can help it. It actually helps a lot if they scrape it or you manually submit it to them. Then automatically you have a backlink, then the Google signals are stronger and Amazon likes the external traffic signals. And then it, you know, all of these things, people may be clicking and so on. So it builds up the strength of your listings as well.
Okay. Wow. It's good stuff. So in terms of getting traffic, I can understand how that would definitely work. How does that work? How do we keep our profits? Is that just a strategy for launching? So when we don't care about profits per item, or are we, is this an ongoing sustainable way of doing things? And if so, how do we do that?
In general, if you're asking about the difference of pricing between your Shopify site and Amazon site, for example, so I would highly recommend to keep it consistent. You probably didn't. Did you mean that?
That's not particularly what I meant, although it's a very interesting point. We should talk about that in a second, actually. I was thinking more about if you're trying deliberately to get your coupons scraped, or even, you know, making it very obvious to everyone, or submitting your coupons, how, if we're using coupons to reduce the selling price,
right,
how do we keep the profit?
Right. Yeah. So giving coupons does not mean that you have to reduce your price that you have right now. So you basically would cushion your price to be higher and then compensate it with the coupon. Now, you know, you will say, wait a minute, but now I am $12.99 and then I'm going to be $16.99. So nobody is going to buy me, all right? Even there is a coupon shining there. You know, maybe they will not make the calculation. When in fact, if you are comparing yourself to with the neighbor listings and the other guy is, let's say, $13.99 and you are $16.99 with a discount, it doesn't mean that people will click on the lowest priced one. Because when I'm looking at the range of similar items and they all with the similar prices, somehow subconsciously, I always discount the cheapest one because cheapest one associates with like a lower quality one, right? So, you know, you don't want to buy the very cheapest out of 20 that you sort of pre-selected already on the page. Let's say you're looking down to 4 now. And the one is like $11.99 and all the others in between $14, $15. You are discounting immediately that $11.99 one because you think, oh, maybe something's wrong with it or it feels weird. Why is it so cheap? You know, so it's very often associated with the low quality and they discount that. So cushioning your price a little bit and then with the discount maybe being as cheap as the cheapest guy, you know, is better positioning than being plain cheap guy. It's better to cushion your price and have a coupon amounting to the same buying price in the end. You know, so you shouldn't be scared of raising your PLR price a little bit. There is one limit, though, of when you're raising the price, you know, to cushion for that. There is one number you should be aware of. It's a little bit with the psychology. The number 40. You know, they say that the number 40, so 40 pounds, $40, 40 euros, whatever, the 40 is the limit when you are making a purchasing decision, you feel a little bit guilty and have a little bit of extra second to think about it. Or as they say informally, you have to go check with your wife, you know, if it's okay to buy it. So basically, if you have a prices that are just above the 40, I would still recommend keeping them under 40. So in that case, I would have to dip into your profit, like I buy a dollar or something just to have a coupon there. So that's the only case when I wouldn't jump over. If you have right now $38.99 or $39.99, I wouldn't go over 40 to become a 42. Just because psychologically the $40 is the ceiling where, you know, people start feeling uneasy with the purchase. And under 40 is just so easy, you know, you just spend it. Yeah.
I was just thinking about these numbers. I mean, thank you for the tip. That's, by the way, very profound idea that price is a positioning tool. As I remember a business coach, you know, saying years ago, very true, that the idea that we don't want to be the cheapest. We have this anxiety that because Amazon is a very price-driven marketplace, but also, let's face it, they've developed the fussiest consumers in the world, as we know from our one-star reviews. So you're right, that staying away from the bottom is very important. So you're basically, I guess, attracting the methodical buyers by being, you know, looking like value, but not the cheapest. That's probably also the way they think. But the other thing I wanted to just reflect on is this limit. I mean, when you said £40, the limit where you go check with the wife, I mean, I have a wife, but I certainly check with her about what I feel is significant things. But for me, I think the limit that I would check with my wife would be several hundreds. I mean, so it's quite interesting how personal a limit is. I think I'm kind of a gift to anyone selling things because I'm a very spontaneous buyer. And like you, I look at the first page, but unlike perhaps I don't have like a price limit that sort of $40. I'm like, well, it's about £100. That's a bit much. Maybe right. For me above £80 would be the limit. But it's a very personal thing, isn't it? And I think you're right that actually it's so interesting to catch one's own limits because you realize, okay, that's my buying behavior. Fine, that doesn't matter. But if that influences my behavior as a seller, then that's incredibly important to be aware of. What's my personal price limit? And is that affecting unconsciously what I'm doing for my pricing for other people?
You know, I think the 40 is closely synced with what kind of audience we have on Amazon. And we have those bargain hunters, right? So I think that the 40 is very nicely. Plus, most of our products, most private label products at least, are like, you know, under the 40. We have a lot of furniture items and so on, you know, washing machines and so on. But those private labelers that, you know, start and go with the flow for a few first years, we are mostly around that price range, you know. So the $40 is very of essence, you know, to know of that first limit. I believe that there are some sort of steps, you know. There is the first one at $40, and the next one, there are like steps, you know. The next one maybe the $100 one, and then the next one. So there are steps in that struggle that gets harder and harder as you go, you know. So maybe you just skipped over one, being the spontaneous buyer that you are, like you mentioned.
You mentioned Shopify and Amazon as the classic places where people sell. How do we deal with price consistency or inconsistency between the channels? Should we keep the price the same? Is it allowed to be different?
I would definitely keep your price the same, and if you can afford it, even better priced on Shopify. Because on Shopify, people who don't, you know, they will have to pay the shipping fee if you don't offer the free shipping on your Shopify website. That automatically means that the shipping that you will suggest will be obviously higher than the Amazon's deals for shipping because they have negotiated good rates with UPS and so on. So because of that, your Shopify prices should minimum match the Amazon prices and be even lower if you are not doing the free shipping for them. So again, it's a completely different world, you know, with the Shopify. It will depend on how you're getting your traffic, you know, if the traffic is organic, how it's converting, you know. So all these other factors that are not relevant to us on Amazon will have to be taken into consideration, you know, what's your cost of acquisition for each customer. And then you will know your profit margin and how you can play with it. So sometimes just simple advice, like Paulina just said, you know, match your prices with Amazon might not be always be feasible. So look at your own situation, you know, because there are so many more factors working there. But in general, when from the person who is buying perspective, it's obviously very good if you have a price which is the same, you know, so then he could choose which one to choose from. There's another struggle that a customer may have when choosing between your Shopify and Amazon is that, you know, they trust Amazon, and to trust a Shopify site which, you know, is unknown to them might be harder to, you know, to leave your credit card number in there. So that's again this little bit of if you want to play on the price to convince them to shop on yours and not on Amazon, then you should definitely be like a dollar or two cheaper at least, you know, or some amount that makes their effort worth it, you know, to trust you. And so definitely so many factors working into that formula. You know, you have to sit by the whiteboard and just try to write down, brainstorm a little bit of things when you are creating. It's a whole different talk. I could talk about that strategy, you know, how to come up with your Shopify prices. So small bits would be enough for now. That's magic. Yeah.
That sounds like a really good topic. I mean, for the moment, we'll keep that on. We'll get you back. You've just kind of given me a definite yes, we'll have that, please. But I want to buy that. But I think we keep moving for the Amazon for the moment, because that is the sort of main focus of what we do. Although we definitely, most serious business owners that I know have more than one channel. And sometimes that might be their own website as a retailer. Sometimes it's selling direct to big box retailers. It does vary, actually. So thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for Kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.